What is going on, podcast listeners? Neil here for another episode of the Freedom Formula, here with my boy, Aaron Harper, CEO of Rolling Suds. How's it going, Aaron?
It's going great. I'm excited to be here with you today.
Yeah, Aaron, I was telling you earlier, I am slightly fanboying right now because I've been following your journey, and I'm like, I want to be Aaron when I grow up. So the fact that you're on the podcast here is really, really exciting for me. I feel like the listeners are going to love this one. Aaron, can you tell everyone a little bit of the background on you, who you are, and then we'll dive into it.
Sure. Yeah. So I've been in the franchise industry for years, working in residential and commercial services, which I know you with your brand are in as well. Both businesses I've been involved in prior to this one, I was a W-2 employee at, helped grow both of those to become the biggest brand in the world in that industry. And they still are today. So carpet cleaning, then drywall repair. The drywall repair company I helped grow by 223 locations in 24 months. And all of those locations opened with jobs on the calendar and a full-time skilled laborer hired prior to going to training. So we had some really good systems there. Had to do a bit of a turnaround with that brand. It was in pretty bad shape when we got involved. The company I was working for was like, hey, we're going to buy a business. It's not a franchise yet. We want you to franchise it. We'll double your salary and give you a really fancy title. And I was like, I can do this on my own.
Fancy titles.
I can find a business that I believe in. Yeah, I can franchise that business. I can make it become the biggest brand in the world in whichever industry I decide. Looked at two dozen different businesses across the country that were not franchised yet that I could franchise. Mm-hmm. Met the founders of Rolling Suds in September of 22. Mm-hmm. And best business I looked at, the founders of Rolling Suds are just incredible people, the Wendling family. And so we partnered. I acquired the franchise rights in January of last year, started franchising in February, and we've now sold 128 locations in 24 states to 40 franchisees, and we've done that in 11 months, and every single one of our franchisees will be open by the end of April. And
unreal,
I'm married
man.
With two young kids, and I live in Nashville.
There we go. That's incredible, man. Well, I want to dissect that story a lot. I think one thing which is always fascinating for me is kind of an origin story, is talking about how you got to where you are. And a lot of things that, Aaron, like you're talking about here, have to do with a lot of like, you don't have a lot of limiting beliefs that certain newer founders have. And I feel like you only eliminate those limiting beliefs by actually going through the ringer. So I'm curious, when you first started, I believe you were working in the film industry. You weren't in franchising, you weren't in business, anything like that, right? Was that the origin of your, when you started off your career?
Right. Yeah. So after college, I had before franchising, I literally had a career in the film and television industry, working on the business side of working with like actors and writers, like on their management teams.
Mm-hmm.
And did that for 5 years and realized that I didn't want anything that my bosses had.
Okay.
And I was like, I should probably look for something else. And switched from Hollywood to carpet cleaning after a couple year journey and figuring out what I wanted to do next.
So I think a lot of people are there. They're like, they look at the corner office, they think, I really don't want this. Maybe some people do, but a lot of people listen to this podcast probably don't. When you made that jump, why didn't you go straight to entrepreneurship? Why did you go to another job?
Yeah, so I wasn't ready. I didn't have the skills necessary to go in entrepreneurship yet. And my journey in entrepreneurship is like, I reached a cap in an industry that I had learned everything that I felt I needed to learn in order to make that jump into entrepreneurship. So it was either get promoted at a company and put myself on a C-suite track, probably within 5 to 10 years. Or say, all right, well, I know how to do it myself. I've spent years learning and I'm going to go do it now on my own. And so I do think that some of your listeners are probably at that stage where they're hitting a ceiling at the company they're at and they want to become a business owner, but they don't know where to start.
Yeah.
For me, it was taking everything that I had known and that I had done for years and that I had become, you know, more or less an expert in. And then trusting myself enough to go into doing it for myself instead of someone else.
Was the plan always to work for like, so by the way, I think I don't know if you worked for ChemDry directly, or you were you working for them directly or working for a franchise company?
I was with them directly in franchise development. So franchise sales.
Okay, so you're in franchise sales. And did you go to ChemDry after film and know that I'm doing this temporarily to learn the ropes and I'm going to jump into something else? Like, how does someone go from film to fran dev and franchising? It's a very different pivot, right? Like, what was the master plan?
So you always say, like, franchise, you don't find franchising. Franchising kind of finds you. Like, no one graduates college and is like, I'm going to go into the franchise industry. Like, it just doesn't happen. And so, or I guess not commonly. So a buddy of mine was like, hey, you know, as I was calling around to different people I knew from college and asking them what they're working on and what they're doing. And he told me about, like, you should get into franchise development. And I was like, what's franchise development? And because, like, I only thought it was McDonald's. Like, that's what I thought franchising was McDonald's and Chick-fil-A. And he's like, no, there's these home service businesses. Have you heard of ChemDry? And I grew up in Southern California. And there's like 300 ChemDrys in California. And so I had obviously seen the brand, and he told me that people can basically buy into a home service franchise for less than, you know, 300 grand, all in, and build, you know, a home service business. And I loved the idea of being able to help people become business owners. It was more about that idea than like, okay, it's carpet cleaning and I'm passionate about carpet cleaning. It was, I'm passionate about helping people become business owners. And, and then after 5 years of doing that, I just decided to take my own advice.
Gotcha. So it was from ChemDry and selling those, and you saw how franchising works, the process, the inner workings, and you're like, let me just go do this myself. And you, I really liked your model, because what you did is you acquired an old school company, not to run it. And I don't even know if you acquired it. I kind of want to dive into that, but to turn into a franchise. A lot of searchers like you and I see on Twitter and stuff, they're trying to buy a business to run it. Your whole intention was, let me partner with them and build a franchise arm. Can you walk me through that thought process as well as the structure of that deal?
Yeah. So I wasn't looking to buy a business that I knew nothing about and then go run that business, right? Like, then I'd have to learn how to run a $2 million+ power washing company. Like, I was looking for a business owner who's really good at their business, so that I could do what I'm really good at, which is build franchise systems, and I could build a franchise system around their business. So when I was looking at, when I was looking at businesses, the intention was never to go and acquire a business and then run that business and then learn it and then franchise it. And then that, that founder rides off into the sunset. So I had to align incentives with the founder. So I created a different business, which is the franchise business. And I built teams and I raised capital for that business. And then I structured it in a way where the founders basically have more or less very little risk. They keep running their business. They own that. You know, now they get a piece of Rolling Suds franchising. And now we're all focused on growing Rolling Suds in the best way possible. Whereas if I went and acquired their business, I'd be in the same position that a lot of searchers are in, where the founder kind of probably bails because he's got his pot of money and he's excited or she's excited. And now they have to figure out, oh gosh, how do I run an HVAC business? Or how do I run an electrical business? And they're just like wading through it, which that's why I really like franchising, is it's like, no, this is what I'm good at. I'm good at creating systems around a business. So it, it didn't matter if it was power washing or insulation or, you know, painting or whatever. Like, I can build a franchise system around any good business.
So when you looked at Rolling Suds, and by the way, from my understand, that's its own entity. The owners still run that business. On your end, you're kind of like licensing and copying their systems and franchising it. That's a completely different LLC, which that owner has a little bit of ownership in, but it's also you as well as the investors. And now you're scaling that rapidly. Did you have to go into their operations and say, hey, I need to make an ops manual out of this? The way you guys are doing it is not franchisable. Let me redo the whole thing. Like, how was that transformation process for you for this older school Rolling Suds business to make it franchisable?
Right. So I had learned systems on marketing and training and recruiting employees and like all the things that any good franchisor should do. So I knew all of those things. What I needed from them was the intellectual capital that they have on how to make a power washing business profitable. Right. So like, how do they build a $2+ million power washing business? And then how do I condense down 34 years of knowledge into a training program and an ongoing coaching program and an ongoing training program? Because we now need to transfer 34 years of knowledge to someone like me who knows nothing about power washing. Yep. And so what I did is I said, all right, well, we've got this 33-year-old business and all the nuances that go into it. That's hard to replicate. Mm-hmm. Why don't we break it down to one truck? What does a truck need to do per day in order to, and what is the labor, what are the labor costs? What are the marketing costs need to be? What's the conversion rate on those leads need to be? Who is necessary to run the truck? What does its scale look like to truck number two and truck number three? We basically built a plan of this is what we need to do. And when they, this is what's wild. When they started looking at what their trucks were doing annually on a per truck basis, they hadn't done that before. It completely just that one shift transformed their business and made their trucks be able to generate more revenue. So the jump that they had from 2022 FDD to what we're about to file is like a pretty big, it's like a good percentage jump on a per truck basis because they started looking at it like we're having franchisees look at it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
So Aaron, one thing on the franchise side, one thing I've always been very impressed with for you guys is just how fast you guys have grown. Right. And I feel like a lot of this has to do with the vision of what you had at the beginning. You weren't like, hey, I'm going to add a few units every year. You're like, no, I want to go big up front. Now, you never ran a franchisor operation before, but you came in here with big plans. You got investors. I know some of your investors who are big names in the franchise space. Like, I guess my question is, how did you come into this role as a brand new business owner and say, hey, I'm going guns to the wall? Walk me through that mindset. Was it just you already knew you wanted to go big? Your investors told you got to go big? Does this come from your brand life experience? Like, walk me through that part.
Yeah. So I'm the majority shareholder in the company. We have we have minority investors, and then the second highest shareholders are the founders. Okay. And I've built the team now to basically support a 300 unit plus system. So I have 17 employees on my team, which, as you know, for the stage of the life cycle that we're at as a franchisor, that's a lot of staff.
Yeah.
But I did that on purpose because if I know I'm going to grow, I need to build the team before I need the team. And I need to build the systems that I know we're going to break in a year to 2 years if I don't build these systems the right way. With Patch Boys, that brand had no systems in place when we got involved. Like, there weren't any. And there were 100 units sold, 40 franchisees. So me and a brand president had to basically go in and create a franchise system that had a bunch of franchisees out operating that didn't really have a system to go off of. And so I learned then what needs to happen, what needs to go into building something that can then get franchisees set up for success when they leave. And then throughout that experience, the company I was working for was acquiring other brands from other franchisors. And I saw the challenges that all those other brands had. And so the idea of being able to start from scratch, build everything that I know needs to be built now in order to get us to 300, 400, 500 units, like I had enough capital in order to do that. And that's a big piece of franchising is capital at the beginning. Yeah. Like you're going to burn cash. Like you're going to burn cash. And like you have to know what your run rate is to get franchisees out profitable producing royalties. Anyways, to answer your question very simply, I have the foresight necessary to know where we're going to be in 3 years and what needs to happen now to get us there.
Aaron, can you walk me through your team and what they do? And you mentioned the foresight. I feel like there's two parts of the team. There's the inner stuff, the fran dev people, things like that, of like selling more units, onboarding franchises, things like that. And then there's franchise support. Those are both things where you've already invested ahead of time for expecting growth. Can you walk me through what those two arms look like, either from personnel or even like what is the system that you've created ahead of time, which maybe not is needed, maybe might not be needed right now, but will be needed soon?
So this is one thing that we have that's like pretty much impossible to replicate for an emerging brand. And I want to preface that with, for any people who are either looking at franchises or they want to franchise their business or they've looked at franchises before, the franchise development, the franchise sales arm of our company is me.
It's me. Wow. Yeah.
All 128 locations I've personally taken from intro call to signing the agreement myself. So,
wow. Okay.
Every one of them. And so what that means is a few things. One, we're hanging on to the majority of the franchise fee.
Yep.
Which means we can invest that back into infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. Two, it means I've turned away 51 people who wanted to be franchisees and weren't right for our system. They had the capital. They wanted to write me up between $150,000 to $200,000 check. And I said no. So I know exactly who my franchisees are. And I only sign up those ones. So we've basically built this baseline of really qualified franchisees who honestly have a very similar mindset to me, because I'm the one talking to them from start to finish. But that's my background, right? So we talk, go back to like, why did you decide you could? Because I knew I could do it. Like I was going to do it for someone else.
Yeah.
I just recently hired an assistant and she's been helping out for the last month or so. And then we're going to build a team, right? So now I've got, you know, we're going to build a team on the franchise development side.
Yeah.
So all of my staff is support. All other 16 employees other than me is marketing and support for franchisees.
Wow. Okay. So what, can you tell me what you guys do in terms of marketing for franchisees? So if someone gets launched, they're like, how do I get leads? What do you guys do internally to help support them in that process?
Yeah. So we have six different marketing agencies actually that generate leads for franchisees. Four of them are inbound residential lead generation companies where we generate leads to the call center. Okay. Our call center is based in Utah. So it's US based, which I do think is important. And then we have two outbound commercial marketing companies. So they do outreach to commercial customers, property managers, facilities managers, as if they are the franchisee. And when someone replies and says, yeah, I need an estimate on these 8 apartment buildings that I manage, the franchisee then pays for that lead and goes out and sells that job, or someone on their team goes out and sells that job. And so we turn all of these marketing companies on weeks before they go to training.
Mm-hmm.
And so franchisees, we teach them how to estimate. They're out running their business full time, doing business development for a month before they go to in-person training for a week. And so that's like how we do it. And I took the Orange Theory fitness model where they wouldn't let anyone open until they sell a whole month of memberships. So my thought process was the same on, you know, how do I get franchisees to the point where they can get to scale faster? Well, I'm going to ask them to leave their job or whatever it is they're doing professionally a month before they go to training. And they're going to be out doing business development, developing relationships, being in their community, going to BNIs, all the stuff that you probably tell your franchisees to do, you know, like be out there talking to people and developing relationships. And we're really heavy on the commercial side. The majority of our business is commercial power washing.
Okay.
So, you know, $20,000 jobs, $10,000 jobs, $13,000 jobs, like those are the types of jobs that we're targeting. And so that that those jobs are won based upon relationships and being part of the community and trusted.
Yeah. Aaron, can you walk me through, and you've seen this through selling franchises before for ChemDrizzle is what you're doing right now. A lot of people want to start franchising and get into business and do it part-time. Hold on to your job. Go ahead and do it. I'm curious on your thought process on that. Is that doable or does it just depend on the model? What are your thoughts after selling hundreds, if not thousands, of franchises?
The franchisees that struggle that I've seen, and we don't allow it for rolling suds, just to be clear, but the franchisees who try to keep their job and hire someone to run their business for them have a higher failure rate. And that's just what I've seen in general across home services specifically. It does depend on the model, because if you go buy an Anytime Fitness right now, they're going to want you to buy five of them.
Yep.
And they expect you to pay for a district manager and a manager for each of those five locations and have the capital necessary to have that and deploy that. But when you build an Anytime Fitness, people Google it and then they go to the Anytime Fitness. With a home service business, you're a hunter. You or someone on your team has to go out and get the business, has to develop the relationships in the community. And it is very hard to employ someone who cares as much about the business as you would as the owner, unless that person has a meaningful amount of equity. And typically the recommendation I make is some type of pre-existing relationship with you. So that they can't go work there. It's unlikely that they're going to go work somewhere else if they get a better job offer. But I believe that the best way to start a service business is to have an owner of the business, boots on the ground, making it their everything. And I know that people don't want to hear that, because when people hear franchise, they think they should be able to just buy it, the franchisor. And I should preface it with, some people think that the franchisor should just produce the leads and generate the revenue and they can put a manager in place. Unfortunately, based on my experience in watching thousands of franchise locations be sold, is that the ones who do that end up either failing or they have to leave their job a year later anyways, because they've burned so much cash that the only way they're going to get a return on their investment is if they leave.
What sound advice. And I think that's something, at least me on the franchisor end, run into a lot, where a lot of people inquire and they say, hey, I work a high paying job. I want to invest in this, hire a manager. No, I don't have any business experience, but I can make it work. I work nights and weekends. And I always tell them, this is going to be just a riskier move for you. It's almost not worth it. If you're going to do nights and weekends and you don't even know the manager you're going to hire, why do this? It's not really worth the risk in my mind, because there's so much that could go wrong. Business is already hard and you're making it even harder on yourself. It is really tough though, because some people just, they get into a job role and they have those golden handcuffs, and it's really scary to leave if you're making 150, 200, 250 grand at your job. And you're like, hey, I'm going to go work for a franchise or start my own business. I might not make any money in year one. That's a very scary proposition. But the reality is sometimes you just got to shoot from the hip and make that move. Hopefully early in your career, if that's something you really, really want to do.
Yeah. And the other thing I'll say is, like, I'm not looking for like part-time effort franchisees that want to like make things kind of work if it like fits their schedule. And like, I'm looking for people who want to go all in and build a, you know, multi-million dollar enterprise that potentially spans, you know, across multiple states and multiple markets. Like, that's our buyer. Like, that's who we're looking for. And so like the franchisee who like wants to like dip his toe in and like keep his $150,000 a year like sales job at Oracle and like work on the weekends and nights, like, that's just not our buyer. Like, that's not the thought process of the culture of the individual who's coming into Rolling Suds. The thought process and the culture of the individual who's coming into Rolling Suds, they're leaving not a $150,000 a year job. They're leaving a $400,000 or $500,000 a year job. They've exited businesses before. They've grown other people's businesses. They've raised capital for other people's businesses. We just signed up one of the best poker players in the world. You know what I mean? Like, we're bringing in like high level individuals that want to build a multi-truck empire. And so even if we did allow that person in that wants to keep his $150,000 a year job and work nights and weekends, he wouldn't get along with the rest of the franchisees because they have different goals.
It's self-regulating. Like,
so I'm very careful of my community.
Yeah, I love that. Aaron, I feel like we could go on for an hour, but I want to respect your time as well. And I feel like you've given so much value over here. Aaron, thanks so much for hopping on, dude. This was incredible. If people want to follow you, want to learn more about you or Rolling Suds, where can they find you?
Just follow me on Twitter. I've been putting out, as you know, a lot of content. Aaron Harper, CEO, is my handle. You could also find me on LinkedIn, but I've been way active on Twitter recently.
Perfect. And we'll put all of those links in the show notes. And that's a wrap for this episode. Thanks so much, Aaron.
Thank you so much.